curious like me.
Have you ever thought what life is like for a bee?
Oh, what a glorious thing to be, a healthy grown-up busy, busy bee, filing away the passing hours, pinching all the pollen from the coffee flowers.
Literally sweet, eating pollen, making honey, pollinating flowers and crops, working hard. They're not called worker bees for nothing. Bees are pretty incredible, but we know their numbers are declining, and that's where robots come into the discussion. Seriously, is there nowhere that's safe? Even the bees' jobs are at risk from being taken over by robots. Or are they? Dr. Manu Saunders is from the University of New England and is our guest in Creepy But Curious today. Good morning.
Good morning.
Why have we started looking at robotic pollinators?
So this story pops up every couple of years. we're all fascinated with technology. When we start having problems and we start realizing that things aren't going the way that we might want, we start looking for solutions. And often technology seems like an easy solution. So a couple of years ago, some people invented little robot pollinators in a lab. And obviously it hit the global news as this was the solution to all our Save the Bee needs. Mm. But, yeah, the reality is a lot more complicated.
All right, let's go back to the very beginning. How essential are bees in pollinating our food?
Bees are absolutely vital. So, you know, the honeybee gets a lot of attention. That's the most common one that we know of, the little golden stripy ones that we see everywhere. They live in hives. They make honey. So they're not native to Australia, and they're a managed species. So there's almost like a domesticated livestock in a sense. So we manage them and keep them alive and keep them reproducing. There's also thousands of native bees. So in Australia, we have about 2,000 species of native bees. Because bees are called obligate pollen and nectar eaters. So that's all they eat as adults. And they also have to collect that pollen to take back to their nest cells for the larvae, the little babies, to eat that then develop into new adults. So that's why they're such good pollinators, because they just pretty much only visit flowers. They sometimes eat some other weird things.
But they're not the only pollinators, are they? And sometimes it's their interaction with and around other pollinators that actually does the job.
Definitely. And there's flies, wasps, butterflies, beetles, all sorts of other insects that are also really important pollinators. And the thing is that, you know, every flower is different. Like, you know, you look at all the different flowers in your garden, they all have different structures and different shapes and different colours. So they're all sort of designed to attract different animals and be pollinated by different animals. So a single bee isn't going to be the best pollinator for every single flower on Earth. So that's why we need that diversity of pollinators.
So I feel like that's where we hit our first sticking point when it comes to robotic pollinators.
Definitely.
Is that it's not as simple as just landing on the flower, doing a little dance, yeah, and heading on back to wherever you're going next.
Yes, it is a lot more complicated than that.
Do we know enough about what bees are doing to replicate it?
No, we know basic information. We obviously know that that's, you know, what they eat, and for some of them we know where they live, but especially with Australia's native bees, the vast majority of them we actually don't know hardly anything about their ecology, what they need to survive. So, you know, we sort of make a lot of assumptions based on the general knowledge that we have about insects.
Does that mean it's completely unfeasible that a robot could do the pollinating job to the same level that a bee is doing?
Definitely. I think, you know, the whole idea of the robot pollinator sounds sexy and exciting.
New age, science, yeah, yeah. Sci-fi, all our dreams coming true.
But, you know, the reality is the only time it would work would be in just extremely controlled conditions where you have literally the same type of flower and everything is absolutely controlled, which is, you know, very unlikely. In most farms and orchards and crop systems, you know, you're never going to get robot pollinators to work.
Mm. What do we know about the robot pollinators that have been started to create, about the design that's been patented?
So there's sort of been a couple of different versions, I think, that I've seen covered in the news, created by different labs. So essentially they're just like little hovering drone sort of things, but, you know, very small, obviously, with little arm things on them that sort of come out and they fly along, and apparently I haven't seen them in operation, but apparently, according to the description, they touch the flower, get the pollen, and then move on to the next flower. It's all very biologically, it just seems a little bit far-fetched to actually work in real life.
And I know that there are farmers listening around the state at the moment who are like, you know what, when you tell me little drone piece of technology, all I'm seeing is a price tag.
That's exactly it. And that's the other thing that sort of hasn't really been discussed in all these wow stories about robot pollinators is, you know, the reality is that it's going to be so expensive to actually make and deploy all of these pollinators across all the farms in the world. So it's just never going to happen.
Yeah. There's too many other costs, I think.
Yes. And it also comes back to the issue of, you know, it's again another one of these things, treating the symptoms instead of the cause. You know, the problem with pollinators and declining pollinators in some parts of the world is habitat loss and all the things we're doing to the environment. So, you know, we should be focusing the money and investing time and effort into addressing those issues instead of, oh, let's create more robots and that will just fix everything.
You're listening to ABC Radio Newcastle and New South Wales. My name's Kaya Hanley. Great to have your company. My guest, Creepy But Curious today, is Dr. Manu Saunders from the University of New England. We're talking robot bees. So why even design these robots, these pollinators?
I think, I can't speak for the researchers that did it, but I guess, you know, it is interesting to see if it's possible, I guess. And I think, you know, there may be some applications for it in a lab setting where you're wanting to test specific things under controlled conditions. So I can see there may be being a use for small numbers of these things in scientific research, you know, in controlled environments. But as far as wider application goes, I can't see much use.
Especially when they can be designed for a more specific purpose, not an overall pollinator, because we know that flowers look different, conditions are different, like it's just not going to work that way.
Yeah, and I did see one a patent application by Walmart, of all people.
Of course.
That from last year or the year before for robot pollinators. I'm not sure if it got approved or anything. I didn't follow that up. But the design, I read through their patent application and the design was just not going to work for most flowers. So I guess if you've got, you know, a very open dish sort of shaped flower like a daisy or something where the pollen is very open and presented up the top and it's very easy to touch, it may work for a flower like that. But when you think of something like, you know, a lot of the tubular flowers or lilies and those sorts of things, you know, it's quite impossible to design something that's going to be able to get in and touch all the pollen parts of all those different kinds of flowers.
Yeah, because nature's not here to help us.
Exactly.
It's doing its own thing. It's on its own trajectory of where it wants to go. We did have that listener raise Black Mirror. Have you seen the episode in question, Manu?
I haven't, sorry.
Well, so basically we're in the future. Let me paint a picture for you and anyone else who hasn't seen it. We're in the future and there have been robotic bees created and they look like little bees and they do their thing and they're connected to a government something and they pollinate the world's food because the bees are dead. All going really well. Until it's not, and these bees start swarming and crawling in the ears of humans and killing them, is there a security risk that Black Mirror was sort of trying to tap into when it comes to robotic pollinators?
I would say that's highly unlikely to ever happen. I think insects, unfortunately, get a really bad rap in popular culture. They're often very much misrepresented on ecology and biology. Bees, there are very few bees, if any, that I can think of that would crawl into your ear in the first place. I doubt that would happen if you know, it was some weird robot programmed by an evil genius maybe, but...
All right, so we can park the security ideas. It's more about the fact that it's not a feasible pollinator.
Yes.
Where do you think this conversation goes from here? Because as you said, it just does keep popping up and it seems like in the background there are more people trying to make this a reality.
Yeah, and I think I guess the reason it gets so much attention is it, you know, sounds exciting. We all love these wow sort of techie kind of things. But, you know, the reality is nature is much more fascinating and, oh my God, than a lot of robots and technology are. So if we just kind of look to what's going on in you know, the ecosystems around us, I think there's much more fascinating interactions and weird, creepy, curious things happening that we can learn from than just, you know, creating new little gadgets.
The perfect way to finish this conversation is we're talking about weird and wonderful things that you've seen in your community. Manu, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Manu Saunders there, UNE Business School and School of Environmental and Rural Sciences, joining us.